So, ladies and gentlemen, this is Gail Snyder. She's going to be talking to us about knitting.
I'm going to talk about my experience as a knitter and a blind person and how the two came together. When I was about eight or nine years old, my mother decided to teach me to knit because they tried to teach me at school, but it didn't sort of turn me on at all. But my mother was still having babies at that time. My youngest sister is 10 years younger than me. So I learned from her very soon. I learned to make booties. I learned to make little lacy sweaters and cute little baby things. And I think that was such a good idea of hers to give me small things to learn to knit, because you find that, you know, you get done quickly and you've accomplished something. Because, you know, a ball of yarn just sort of lays there. But once you've made something beautiful, it has a whole new life of its own. And so I learned to knit. I was born with cataracts, and although at school I could see well enough to read large print, they said, no, this isn't going to give her the best training with her potential and so on. So they made me learn Braille, and I became much better as a Braille reader than I would ever have been as a print reader. So I grew up being able to look at my knitting. I had to look fairly close to it, but I looked at everything I did when I stuck the needle in the stitch and wound the yarn around it and pulled the needle through. And so I cast the stitch from the left needle to the new stitch on the right needle. And, you know, people, you all who knit, you'll know what I'm talking about. But I used to watch myself. And of course, I love colors and things. I mean, I still do. But when I was expecting my first baby in my mid 20s, I suffered with a dramatic case of glaucoma, which by the time my second child arrived, I was completely blind. And so because I had had cane travel training from my husband, as it turned out, I was able to get around, do things, you know, cook, do those kinds of things. But I really didn't think I could knit anymore, because any time I wanted to handle some yarn and some needles, I couldn't see what I was doing, and it drove me nuts. And then when my son, the firstborn, was 3, I decided I really wanted to make him a little sweater. Come on now, you know, he's a 3-year-old. He needs his mother to make him a sweater. So I started just making myself do it. And it wasn't a question of sleep shades. I mean, I had no vision left. So I just went for it. And what I found was that, in fact, not only could I do everything I did before, but I could do it better. I could feel what I was doing. And it's called reading the stitches, reading them. Like when you read Braille, you read Braille by touch. So when you knit by touch, you read the stitches. You can tell what stitches are coming up on your left-hand needle. So whether they're knit stitches, we say plain in England, in English, knit stitches or purl stitches, you can tell with your left thumb, you can tell what stitches are coming up on the left-hand needle that you are going to need to knit onto the right-hand needle. And because I knew Braille, of course, I was able to copy knitting magazines and so on. And in very quick time, I decided I would teach myself to do cabling, to do all sorts of nice fancy stitches. I make bobbles. They're not very nice ones, but I do make them. But my cabling is really good. My lace knitting is really good. And it's all a matter of touching what I'm doing and getting my bearings from that. And that's what we call reading the stitches. And another thing that, as a blind person, I do appreciate, maybe even more than I did already, was the joy of texture. Because knitting, you know, different colors and everything is great. And I can still knit with like 2 or 3 different colors and keep track of them. But I can't see them So if the fabric that you're making in the end, kind of a, if it's a, kind of a smooth fabric, what they call stockinette in this country, we call it stocking stitch. So it's smooth on one side and rough on the other, and that's all it is, basically. But if it isn't really exciting. Whereas once you get into seed stitch, which is knobbly on both sides, like it sounds, or moss stitch, or ribbing. Ribbing is like corrugated, like you know what corrugated cardboard feels like. So it goes in and out and in and out in columns and so on. And you become you get to a point where you start to make your own choices. This is the fun part about knitting. When I read a pattern this time, I decide how I'm going to do it. The pattern may tell me certain recommendations, but I'm the one that decides. Right now, as I sit here, I'm making a pattern that has like a quilted effect on it because some of the stitches are pulled into sort of like diamond-edged shapes. And it's a very high texture pattern that I really enjoy. And so one of the other things about doing this knitting this way is that I've been able to share my experiences with other blind people. I have somebody that I'm mentoring right now who wanted to get back to knitting after losing her sight and feeling, well, sure, I can knit. I used to. Surely I can do it. And we work together mostly over the phone because I'm able to tell her, suggest to her what she might like to do so that she can get the effect that she wants. For instance, if you make a feather and fan pattern, it has a lovely scalloped edge, you know, curves in and out. And that's a very pretty pattern that I taught her how to do that and one or two other things. And that's really a great thing, great fun to do, to have knitting friends. And in fact, I know some other, several other blind people who do knit and who get together. There's a senior living residence in Montgomery County, Maryland called Leisure World. And I have some blind friends who get together and knit there. So it can be a very social thing. I joined a knitting group at my local library and I told them about what fun it is to knit small things like, say, dishcloths, where you can practice knitting different styles, different textures, different stitch patterns. And then you come up, you wind up with making something that doesn't have to be too big and take too long. And so I showed them what I was doing. And then I had to go out of town for a while. When I came back, they were all doing dishcloths. So that was a lot of fun.
We're at the half point, Miss Gail, half point.
Okay. Now, where do I knit? I knit everywhere I can. I knit on a train. I knit on a plane, which makes me sound like a Dr. Seuss book, doesn't it? I knit in a car, and I would certainly knit in a bar if I happened to be sitting around waiting for somebody to join me. I knit in a doctor's waiting room, and people come up and say, oh, what are you knitting? What are you making? And so it's a very portable skill and very enjoyable. It does attract people's attention when they want to know what you're doing. And including men, by the way, it's not just women who knit. I'm sure you know that. And so it tends to be a bit of a social icebreaker as well. So now one thing I do need to tell you, that I've been asked to do this and I don't do it because I wouldn't want it done to me, which is to teach a blind person to knit by touch. Because as the knitter, I need total control of my hands and my fingers, and I don't want somebody else getting their hands and fingers in the way of my hands and fingers when I'm trying to knit. So I would infinitely prefer to tell people what to do or to simply refer them to other resources. The libraries are really good. They often will have a knit group, and in any knitting group, you'll have some people who are quite good. You might have some beginners, some intermediates, and some experienced knitters who are very happy to share what they know and give new people some real encouragement. So I will encourage, I will describe things to people, and I will encourage them if I'm in a group, if someone drops stitches and they need help getting them back on the needles, I can do that. I can sew up strips of knitting together, like when people make afghans, they often make long strips, like 3 or 5 or 7 long strips that need to be sewn together. I've done that for blind friends before now. In fact, one of my closest friends died of cancer about 7 years ago, and her friends who came to clear up her apartment, because she tended to collect a lot of stuff, they found that she had a lot of yarn that she hadn't used, and so they put it into big tubs and brought it to me, which was wonderful because I was one of the people that used to help her with her knitting issues. As I was starting to say at first, you know, balls of yarn are fine. You know, you get wool, you get a soft acrylic yarns. Some of them are really very, very soft and lovely. Wool is going to be all kinds of different textures. It's going to be fluffy like mohair, or it's going to be very soft, like cashmere. Or else it can be quite kind of tough, that you could make, you know, string bags with it. And then there are other materials like silk, which is very fine to knit with. I made a Japanese style shawl for my daughter, and it was a very soft, silky fabric. And also linen, linen thread, which is like a very, very thin ribbon of linen. And I made myself a shawl out of that. And but if you go into a yarn shop, there's lots of textures to explore. And while I'm thinking of yarn shops, my local yarn shop, they will teach you to knit if you want. You can just go in there and say, well, I'd really like to join a knitting group or what else, if you have one. And they'll teach you individually or in a group. Because
three minutes left, Miss Gale. Okay. 3 minutes left. Okay.
As I was saying, that there are other people, there are going to be other people that you meet when you're knitting who will share it with you. And so I just think it's a marvelous craft. I'm glad to hear that Ellen knits as well, because it really is a joy to be able to do. And in this pandemic situation, it has pretty much saved my sanity at times, because when I'm fed up with cooking and I'm fed up with doing other things, I've got knitting that I need to finish. And I made my daughter a couple of beautiful lace shawls, a cream colored one and a black one, and in very, very soft yarn, 2 different lace patterns, all over lace, and she loves them. And so I'm now doing a blanket in this quilted pattern, which I like very much. So I really recommend knitting. And there are different styles. Some people hold the yarn in their left hand while they're knitting. That's the continental style. People hold the yarn in their right hand when they're knitting, which is what I do, because it's called the English style. And so Americans tend to, some do it one way, some do it the other way, depending on where their ancestors came from, I think. So that's really, I can't recommend it strongly enough. Sometimes people will tell you not to knit in public. And certainly I have one of my sisters I had this discussion with. She says, if she sees somebody knitting, she cannot concentrate on anything else. She has to watch them. But I do know people who knit in church, sighted people and blind people who knit in church. And it keeps you alert. It means you're not, you know, falling asleep or whatever. And I used to have a choir director who, whose wife was a great knitter, and he chaired a Capitol Hill Works and Pensions Committee. He was their resident accountant. And he said at all their big committee meetings, the women would get out their knitting. And he knew that way that they would be able to concentrate. So you see, knitting is a whole healthy, wonderful thing to do. Robert, am I I about done, would you say? If anyone wants to say something?
Yes, but here's the, I know we don't have time for questions. We have somebody with their hand raised. But there's one thing you could tell all of us, and that is, so you guys, when this is over, there's going to be a free time to maybe ask a few more questions of any of the presenters that are still on the call, and then you guys can talk amongst yourself. So we do have one more person that's going to come up. But Gail, how do you keep straight what color of material that you're working with?
Okay. You can do it in a couple of ways, really. And one of them is if you have two balls of yarn that you're handling at one time, thread a button through one of them. So if you know that if you're handling a red ball and a white ball of yarn, and they're both the same yarn, and they feel pretty much the same, the one with the button threaded into it, you can decide, well, that's going to be the red one. The red one is the one. Now I would use my wonderful color identifier to tell me the difference between the red one and the white, and off I go.
I would love to have a quick verbal description of the knitting stitch. I've knitted all my life, but I would find it interesting to hear a verbal description because I was taught verbally how to knit and purl.
Right. So which stitch would you want to hear about?
Well, I want to hear about the cast on because mine are so tight, but I'm thinking that people might want to hear about the basic knit.
To do the knit stitch, which is, I'm doing a purl row right now. If for the knit stitch, you start out with all your stitches on your left-hand needle, the one that's in your left hand. And if you are an English-style knitter like me, you take the yarn in your right hand, wind it around your fingers, around your ring finger, under your middle finger, then over your index finger, so that it is stabilized, but it's got room to move. Then you stick your right hand needle up into the stitch on the left hand needle, the first stitch that you come to. You stick it in there and sort of point it a bit away from you. And when you've got the tip of the needle safely inside the stitch now has both needles in it. Mm-hmm. Then you take your yarn that you've got wound round for your fingers in the right hand, and you make a loop around your right hand needle. So now what you have is you have one stitch on both needles, and on top of that you've got the new yarn wound around your right hand needle. Then hold on to that. You don't have to hold on tight, but you do have to just hold on. Then you bring the stitch towards the end, the points of the needle. And what you do is you tuck your right hand needle point in to under the left hand stitch, so that what you've got now is a whole new loop that you just made on your right hand needle. Now that you've made your right hand loop, which is your knit stitch, you can let the left hand needle stitch just come off of the point of the needle. Mm-hmm. So you kind of cast it off as you go. And you do that with every stitch on your row. Then when you get to the end, you turn your needles around. You're doing knit stitches in all the rows. Then you start again.
The one thing I was going to mention, too, because I am a knitter, and I would love to talk to Gail. This is great. But I learned how to knit when we lived over in Germany, and I learned the continental style. And I was going to say there's a lot of, to answer the question on casting on, like she said, there's a lot of different ways to cast on. And Bookshare has a book, I don't know if anybody is on Bookshare yet as far as that service for being able to download books, but they do have a knit book on different casting on methods, which is really awesome. So there's lots of ways out there to do it.